I'm Claire Edwards, and you're listening to Rawthentic Leadership, a series of conversations, insights and inspirations with leaders who are real, raw and authentic. Today, I bring you a lively conversation with Stephanie Christopher, CEO of The Executive Connection, an organisation I speak for. Our conversation begins with a question I've never asked my previous podcast guests, and then takes us on a journey of Stephanie's career and her passion for leading the next generation. Enjoy! Stephanie Christopher is the CEO of The Executive Connection, a peer group mentoring organisation that's been developing leaders in Australia and New Zealand since 1986, and with Stephanie at the helm for the last 7 years. When I was chatting with Stephanie about sort of what slant our conversation could take, she lit up when talking about a lot of things, but specifically about growing, developing, and leading young people. So that then became the theme of our podcast, Leading the Next Generation. And Stephanie is used to podcasting. She's the host of the Tech Live podcast, and I will put links in the show notes because it's a fabulous podcast. So today, Stephanie gets to sit back, relax, and be our guest. Stephanie, welcome to Rawthentic Leadership.
Thank you, Claire. And I need to remember not to be too relaxed and sort of kick back, scrolling through my newsfeed, having a cup of tea. I actually do have to do some work here.
And also, avoid the temptation to start interviewing me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't worry. If you fall apart, I've got this.
Fantastic. Now, it's interesting, actually. My opening question is one that I've actually never asked any of my podcast guests before, but it was my curiosity. You know, you're the CEO of the Executive Connection, and looking at your career history, I was thinking, well, you know, when you were growing up, when you were, I know, a little girl, so to speak, I can't mind read. I suspect that where you are now is not the idea that you had in mind for what you wanted to be, or maybe it was. So my opening question, Stephanie, is what did you want to be when you were growing up?
What an interesting question, Claire, because I think you can reverse orchestrate a narrative about your career and your life. And if I go back and think about, you know, being a little girl right up until before I went to university, mm-hmm. I think perhaps I was somewhat a product of the times and of the, of the gender situation at that time. So the first thing I ever would have said I wanted to do was to be a hairdresser. Uh-huh. And as a very little girl, and I remember my grandmother getting stuck into me saying, your parents aren't going to spend all this money on your education for you to become a hairdresser. Uh-huh. So that was my first lesson, gender lesson. And then the second one was, I remember before my high school certificate, my father saying, I think Steph would be a very good PA. And I remember my mother saying, I think Steph would be a very good boss. So, wow. Yeah, and then the last one was what I really wanted to do was law all through school. And I did get into arts law at Sydney University. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I don't know if it swayed me in a different direction, but I remember a friend's older brother who was a lawyer saying something absolutely dreadful about women lawyers. And I was too young and too impressionable and probably a product of that era, and that really affected me. And when I think back about what was said now, it's absolutely gobsmacking, and no one would ever say that out loud now to a young woman.
Yeah.
Wow, that certainly did shape your career, didn't it?
Well, it probably shaped my thinking. Well, it did shape my career because I didn't do arts law.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And then life takes whatever turns it takes, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because I run workshops on unconscious bias, and you know that unconscious stereotyping is still extremely prevalent today. Mm. You know, I talk about a story about a car dealer, a financial investor, and a miner all go to the pub, and they're all having a really good time. They haven't met for ages, and until the bar person or the owner of the bar comes up and asks the miner to cover up because she's breastfeeding.
Yeah,
and you get the response of, you know, I say, okay, so what did you have in your head for the
three of them? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's, I find that pivotal, that your mum said, that your dad said PA and your mum said boss.
Well, absolutely. And what's really interesting is whatever psychometric models you believe in of workplace preference, a PA would be the worst absolute fit for me of any. I'm very low in tenacity, probably a very poor eye for detail. My strengths are, as Pat Lencioni calls them, my working geniuses certainly lie in another area. So I think my partner and assistant is in the right role, and I'm in the right role here.
Well, law's loss is tech's gain, as I can see.
Thank you, Claire.
So the theme of the podcast is leading the next generation. And before we sort of dig into that, there was, when I was doing my my stalking of you, I saw that a quote that you'd said as, the key for success to any organization is a true understanding of the importance of leadership and talent needed to achieve objectives. Mm. And I'd just like to get your thoughts around that, your opinion on that, and just unpack it a little.
Well, what a profound statement I said at that point. Yeah. And there are two parts. The part, there's leadership and there's talent. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit chicken and egg, isn't it? It could be, well, the kind of leader you are or the kind of organization that you have right now, what's the life cycle of the business, and therefore what kind of talent you want to bring into a business that you're leading in that life cycle. Mm-hmm. I think there's a true understanding of leadership is also where the leadership sits in the organization, because more and more I'm realizing you can't be a one-man band as a leader.
Yeah,
it has to be about who's the team you're surrounding yourself with, and what the talent is there, and how critical. If there's something I've learned throughout my career, and indeed, you know, amplified over my last 7 years at tech, how critical it is to have the right people on your leadership team. And so the talent sitting on the team there is important, looking at something different about the diversity, matching, making sure that you've got complementary skill sets or competencies across the leadership team is vital for success in any organization.
Yeah.
And then talent is, what's your lens of talent through the whole business or the whole organization? Are you looking purely from a point of view of performance? Are you looking at evaluating performance and potential for your talent? Are you looking at growing your own, that you're going to bring in people and train them up to become the managers and leaders in your organization? Or are you looking at specific hires? I can think of someone right now, a really senior role in the business, a very specific role, and it's a specific skill set as well as preference that I'm looking to bring in.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's sort of it is a horses for courses, type approach. And I'm just thinking, so if we think about the changing face of leadership over, I don't know, over the last 15, 20 years, that, as you say, leadership is becoming more distributed. It's less about the leader needing to know it all, but rather surrounding her or himself or themselves with the right talent. What, in your opinion, has also changed when it comes to talent acquisition, and I'm sort of leading into the next generation. What are you seeing as the opportunities, the pitfalls when it comes to talent acquisition, and in particular a focus on the next generation?
Okay. So the obvious is a job for life. And believe it or not, I'm involved in five recruitment roles at the moment in various guises. And I think the old thing of looking at a resume and saying, oh, well, they've moved around a bit is irrelevant now.
Yeah.
In a choose your own adventure career pathway. So there's that. And I think as far as talent acquisition, do you know, I don't know that so much has changed really in the last. So it's 21 years ago since I started the corporate part of my career.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the time when McKinsey's War for Talent came out.
Yeah.
And that whole thing about frogs jumping out of boiling saucepans and what have you. I can't quite get the reference now. But anyway, that was the War for Talent. And do you know that hasn't changed in 21 years? Because finding good talent is just as hard as it ever was. Yeah. So that's number one.
Yeah.
And so as far as acquisition or recruitment goes, you need to move quickly if you find someone good.
Yeah.
Where I'm at with that now for people at any stage of their career, but for the, you know, the emerging talent of the emerging generation, is that you still need to slow down to speed up.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, my husband always talks about the Matrix when the bullets started flying, Keanu Reeves slows down.
Yeah.
So I think it's critical to be clear in what you're looking for, clear in what your process is to evaluate, have a mutual evaluation of a new team member. And move at the pace that you need to given the context and the environment. So if you have someone who is truly advanced in another role and they're perfect for you, then you do need to move quickly. Yet more and more now, if a recruiter or if someone says to me, well, they're close to getting another role, then I would be, okay, then they're not right for me.
Yeah.
So it's moving absolutely still at your own pace, but being clear what you're looking for is the best thing that you can ever do when you're recruiting for any role of seniority in an organization. Now, with emerging talent, being clear what you're looking for, you might need to be obviously far more flexible about skills and experience.
Yeah.
Because you might believe that fit is more important and that skills and experience they will acquire, or you will in fact teach them on the job.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the slow down to speed up analogy. I'm thinking also, is that potentially a message for our younger generation entering the workforce? Because there seems to be, and I know this is, again, we're sort of almost, we're generalizing, but this desire to accelerate their career, could that potentially also be a message for them?
Look, it could be a message for anyone. It's interesting. So as you say, a whole other level of unconscious bias isn't helpful here when you're looking across the generations. I'm trying to think of, you know, I've said I've got a number of roles on the go at the moment, and the perhaps younger people applying, do you know, it's still a generalization, but maybe if they have that drive for, well, I'm thinking about where I'm going, and perhaps it's a more contracted time frame than you or I would have had in our early roles, where we might have been, oh, well, you know, in 3 years I might get to that level or 5 years that level. Well, younger people don't think in those longer term. So I am mindful in recruitment that it's important to create a picture of where this could be.
Yeah.
And then I think about Didier Danzinger is another expert I remember hearing years ago now, and he was talking about he had a more, you know, a tech-enabled business. It was a, you know, a more contemporary business, I guess.
Yeah.
But he said something I really liked, that when someone starts on their first day, he says to them, how can I help you during your time with us in this organization to get to your next role?
Brilliant.
And it's a disarming question.
Yeah.
And I find that it's a counter, it kind of counteracts how quickly can I move on and where's the career path you will have for me. It actually really talks to everyone's responsibility for their career. But I actually really like it, and I really like pushing some thoughtfulness in new hires, and particularly younger hires, to give to have some real insight into what their gaps are and what they're seeing this time together could be for them as far as learning and mastery.
Well, it's helping them change their perspective, isn't it? It's and from the absolute outset, and being open and honest and acknowledging things like portfolio careers. I know there was somebody who I was in conversation with quite early on, Ronnie Altit, the CEO of Incentra, said, you know, if he has someone and he can't help them grow any further in his organization, he will do whatever he can to help them transition to the next opportunity that's going to grow them further. Mm. And I think this change in perspective from both the younger person, but also the leader as well, that, you know, for some that's an absolute no-brainer and makes sense, and for others they might struggle slightly with that. I know I've heard in there's an organization I belong to that has sort of quite a few long in the tooth leaders. And, you know, I've heard before, they're saying, well, why should I invest all this training and development and what have you in someone who's going to leave me in 3 months? And I, you know, would hope that that's no longer the conversation, but I have still heard it. How would you answer those critics, Stephanie?
Well, there's two things. I mean, the classic, and it's not my line, is, well, what if you don't invest in them and they stay?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a one lens. And the other is, it's a real challenge. It's a recruitment challenge to make sure you find someone who's not going to leave in 3 months. And in fact, if they do, then mutually the fit wasn't right, and that's a good thing.
And so when we were initially chatting about the slant that it could take, and because it was, for me, it was a toss-up between innovation and creativity,
yeah,
and developing young talent, where has this passion, this desire, this energy come from to focus on growing and developing young talent?
I think, where's it come from? Let me think about it. Probably from, in some part, the unconscious bias we're talking about.
Yeah.
Probably from my own motivators. A motivator of pace and energy in the workplace, and I am energized by people with energy around me. And so the openness and the newness from people earlier in their career matches that well.
Yeah.
Probably an awareness of where I can add value. And I know that I know as a leader and for younger people that I do have I see responsibility in mentorship as well. And I think that, and I take that seriously. It's going to be interesting in my personal life as well. And I had an interesting conversation with a woman who actually was from this is going sidetracking you here, Claire, but she was the COO, which is interesting with the news right now. She was the COO of the Gates Foundation.
Ah.
And our conversation about mentorship was, in fact, mothers as mentors,
mm-hmm.
and our role in mentoring our daughters.
Mm.
And I think that for me, having three daughters, just the experience of that and applying that to the workplace, it's just something that I guess comes naturally and is a natural interest for me, but also I just think there's so much value to be had from team members that have potential, and unlocking that potential brings so much to the business, to any organization. It just adds so much value.
Very, very much so. And that sort of leads me on to asking you about your experience of and thoughts around reverse mentoring.
Well, do you know, I love the idea of reverse mentoring. And as a leader, it's being open to feedback and new ideas, which really drives me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never engaged in that in a formal sense. I'm more interested in it. I am hoping that a number of my team members would say that in one-to-ones they can turn the tables. I'm thinking one of my team in a one-to-one maybe 2 months ago said, look, great, thanks for all that. Let me now ask you some questions. I'm sensing a frustration in you. Let's talk about where that's coming from. And it was really interesting. So I think reverse mentoring is very powerful if you're open to diversity, if you're open to new ways of thinking, if you're open to challenging your own paradigms, and if you have a continuous learning mindset.
Very much so. And I think to add to that, that there is a culture of psychological safety that you feel safe enough to speak up and respectfully challenge without fear of repercussion.
And, you know, I think as leaders and as the more senior we become, that can be really hard.
Yeah.
Because you can assume, oh, anyone can talk to me about anything, and then can be pulled up far too frequently about, oh, right, that person's actually intimidated by me.
Yeah.
So, again, like anything, Claire, it comes back to self-awareness and openness in conversations and encouraging of diversity.
And so thinking about sort of leading intergenerationally, as someone who's built many teams and teams of different generations, it's something I quite often hear in challenges when running team development programs, and again we keep coming back to generalizing, but you know, the young people want to change everything all the time and they think they know everything and all these terrible generalizations. But in terms of your own experience of leading intergenerationally, if there were some tips or advice that you could share that could help close that gap, what might that be, Stephanie?
Acknowledge your bias, have a look in the mirror. That's where I'd start, for the mirror. Have a look in the mirror. And do you really have a bias? Because if you do, you're oozing it whether you think it or not.
Yeah.
So I you know, I can think of the teams within teams that I have here. And at tech, I work with people at the far further end of their career, you know, people who you wouldn't come across in a corporate environment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just coming to where people are with what they're bringing to the context and what their contribution can be, mm-hmm. and how can you accept that and work towards team performance.
Yes.
So I think of intergenerational teams and it just isn't an issue. It draws me up, you know, sometimes I think perhaps some of my cultural references might be a bit dating, and be careful of those, and maybe some of my stories aren't quite as interesting or funny as I think they are. and things that may well have work with people of my own age or stage in personal life may not work, so just lose that. But if you make a thing of it, then it's a thing.
Yeah.
But if you're really looking at diversity of thought and contribution and how you can galvanize that for the best team performance and the best results overall, I just don't think it's an issue.
I agree wholeheartedly. And we know that, you know, the more diverse the team, the more robust the outcomes you can get. And at the same time, it can be less comfortable.
Of course.
As leaders, how do we hold that space for people and normalize that level of discomfort?
Yes.
At the same time, it brings energy.
Yes. Yes. Well, it does. And it can. And that's, again, the diversity. And you know, it can be tricky because some of the things that can be bonding for a team about, you know, how was your weekend? And when your experience is so different and your interest in each other's stories is so, you know, challenged, then it's finding other ways to build engagement.
And I think also, encouraging and embracing curiosity. Mm. So if someone of a very different age group is talking about their weekend and it doesn't make an awful lot of sense to you, become curious, find out more.
Yeah, or find something common to talk about.
Yes.
You know, I find.
Yeah, I know it's slightly going off track, but I just watched I didn't get to see the whole series, but last night watched the final of a social experiment, the people's home for four-year-olds.
Yeah. I cried. It was beautiful.
I'm not the only one.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And you know, that's the extreme, isn't it? But I think the messaging of it, that learning is continuous, improvement is continuous, and that learning from unexpected sources is incredibly valuable.
I couldn't agree more. I absolutely couldn't agree. And from the the elder people, their willingness to change, their flexibility, their adaptability, what a joy and what a gift it brought.
Well, actually, their willingness to be called old people was my problem. Old people do this, four-year-olds do that. And I thought, boy, talk about labelling.
I know, that's why I said elder. I think elder has more dignity in it than old or even elderly.
I don't know, Claire. We'll get back to it and decide when we're at that stage.
I'm never going to get to that stage.
Yeah.
Stephanie, it's been an absolute delight. I just I'd love to finish off on just because I'm loving the nuggets that you're sharing.
Yeah.
So in terms of really making the most of embracing, you mentioned the word contributions earlier, embracing the contributions that the next generation bring to our workforce. What would be your key message around leadership and leading this next generation that would be great to round off our conversation with and provide us with food for thought?
Be open to not having all the answers. Be open that some of your experience is incredibly valuable and some of it counts for nothing with someone from the next generation, and that things that might have that taken you a long time to master just come naturally to them. So, you know, the obvious about digital natives.
Yeah.
But I think it's just sitting in the enjoyment that you don't have to have all the answers in this situation and for this organization. There's a whole burst of inputs that you can really bear the fruit of. That's the big thing for me.
And that's exciting, and that will then, that fruit will then come to the fore in the outcomes and the results that the organization gets.
Well, that's the idea, absolutely.
Oh, Stephanie, it's been an absolute pleasure being in conversation with you. I hope you've enjoyed being the guest.
Very much, Claire. It's been fun being a guest. You still have to think, though. But anyway, Claire, thank you. I've really enjoyed our discussion.
Excellent. And my last little point is, how can people make contact with you? Would LinkedIn be the best?
LinkedIn sounds great. Yes. So you can find me, Stephanie Christopher, on LinkedIn. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Stephanie, go well. Thanks again. And speak to you soon.
Thanks, Claire. All the best.
Bye-bye.